So over the next few times that we do this, I'd like to take up one of my favorite readings from the Sutra book. It's something that we recite each morning here where I live, and we restarted reading it a few years ago, each morning after the opening ceremony and tea at Sesshin. There must be other translations of Daiyo Kokushi's On Zen, but we still use D.T. Suzuki's translation, which, except for the last few words, i.e., this one essence, it is an excellent translation. So Daiyo Kokushi is the posthumous title and how he is currently known of the Zen monk and teacher Nanpo Jomyo. Throughout these talks, I'll call him Daiyo or Daiyo Kokushi. He, along with two other Japanese teachers, shaped what we call the Rinzai School. He was born in 1235 and died 75 years later. Daiyo became a monk in his teenage years, not an uncommon practice. And he sat with an emigre Chinese master for 10 years. He himself then went to China, again, not an uncommon event at the time, and he spent 8 years there. He was given transmission in China, and on returning to Japan, continued to sit with his first teacher. 3 years later, he began to teach at an island temple and then moved again and stayed at Sofuku-ji teaching for 33 years. In the last years of his life, he taught at many of the major temples in Kyoto and Kamakura. I realize my throat's a little bit raspy. We did a 5-day retreat. An in-person retreat last week. Jillian was there, a group of other people, and we didn't have a mic or anything, so my talks had to be sort of expounded a little more than I usually do, and then hours and hours and hours of Dokusan, and I sort of wore it down, and it hasn't quite bounced back yet, but hopefully in the next week or two. Some of the people here would probably like it if I would stop talking, and then in that way it would heal a little quicker, but that's probably not going to happen. So Daiyo Kokushi does not show up in our koan curriculum, but he does in Entangling Vines in case 1969, titled The Sail Has Yet to Be Hoisted. And that koan goes like this. A monk asked Yanto, "How about when the old sail has yet to be hoisted?" Yanto replied, "Small fish swallow big fish." The monk said, "How about after it's been hoisted?" Yanto said, "The donkey grazes in the backyard." Later, a monk came to Daiyo Kokushi and said, "How about when the old sail has yet to be hoisted?" Daiyo said, "Five Mount Sumerus in the eye of a gnat." The student continued, "And how about after it's been hoisted?" Daiyo said, "The Yellow River flows north." And the note says that in actuality, the Yellow River flowed east. So, how about after it's been hoisted? Daiyo said, "The Yellow River flows north. So I'm not sure how many Dharma heirs Dayo had, but he had one great heir, Daito Kokushi. And Daito was the founder of the great Kyoto temple complex, Daitokuji, the training center of Rinzai monks up until this day. So most of you folks, I think you all have sutra books in front of you. And is Daito Kokushi Onzen in your sutra book? So two things, I'd really encourage you to memorize this piece. It's a beautiful piece, and to add it into your own daily recitation of sutras. And maybe right now, take your time, why don't you read through it? And I'm only in this talk going to comment on that first, I think it's on the first four or five lines, but read through the whole thing and then just come back and read through those first five lines, and then I'll continue on. So there's quite a few beautiful lines in there. I especially like that, wishing to entice the blind, the Buddha has playfully let words escape his golden mouth. And heaven and earth are ever since filled with entangling briars. So I'll get to that probably on the third talk more towards the end. But so today we'll look at, there is a reality even prior to heaven and earth. Indeed, it has no form, much less a name. There is something real. There is something that exists, something genuine and authentic, which are definitions of reality. But that is prior to heaven and earth. It is prior to the moon and the sun. It's before the galaxies and cosmos. It might be easy to think, of course, emptiness. Emptiness is before. Emptiness is before heaven and earth. And certainly before eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. And in emptiness, there is no form, no names, no sensation, perception, and so on. To think this, however, would be a grave mistake. Because the Heart Sutra emphatically states that emptiness is form, and form emptiness. And this is one of the great mysteries of the Heart Sutra. In emptiness, there is no form, but emptiness is form. So that way of conceptualizing Dayo's words is incorrect. He is pointing to something else. Prior to heaven and earth, when we fully inhabit this which has no past, present, or future, when you fully embody what has no body, you present, you show, you are before, you are prior to heaven and earth. You are prior to form and name, prior to constructs and dissociated ideas, thoughts, and feelings. When we are prior to, a lovely space opens up, and we can move without constraint. But it seems we so badly, we so need to configure the world and our lives to our own vision and understanding, even when our vision and understandings are narrow and constrained. The other day, someone said to me, "Well, it's all memory anyway." And even to say or think now is a tad late. That is what the neuroscientists are finding, but that isn't Zen. Zen doesn't posit a past, future, or present as distinct, separate realities that we aren't up to speed on. Zen is before, and so it includes memories as present right here now. It includes the past, it includes the unknown, and it includes as of yet unfolded futures. And it includes the now, which is already past a nanosecond ago. It is before heaven and earth, and so includes them. It is before form and name, and so includes them. And by letting go and touching that space, which is no space at all, you touch authentic, genuine reality, which is Zen, which at the same time, although there is no time, it touches what is Zen, which isn't anything at all, because it's prior to heaven and earth. There is nothing that it does not include, sentient or insentient, born or not yet born, near or far away, visible or not visible. And still it has no form, much less a name. Once, when giving a talk at Kofuku Temple, Daio said, "Speaking of Zen, expounding the way, talking about the mystery and marveling is all gouging wounds in healthy flesh. Ultimately, what?" He then said, "I always remember southern China in the spring, the fragrance of the 100 flowers as the partridges cry." That memory, fully embodied, is it. That memory, more than expounding, marveling, or waxing wisely, is it. And it is right here, now. It is not a nano behind. Daio Kokushi is his great mind dynamically alive and regenerative then and now. Daio's On Zen is alive. That is his mind. It's regenerative. That is his mind. And that mind is your mind and my mind. Daio says, "Eyes fail to see it. It has no voice for ears to detect. To call it mind or Buddha violates its nature, for it then becomes like a visionary flower in the air." One day, as Ba Fu and Chung Ching wandered in the mountains, Ba Fu raised his hand and pointed, saying, "Right here is the summit of the Peak of Wonder." "Indeed it is," said Chung Ching. "But what a pity. What a pity. It is like when your Zazen is doing you. There is no inside or outside, no past or future, no coming or going." And then you whisper to yourself, "Wow, this is really Zazen. This is the Peak of Wonder," or some such unnecessary, needless comment. And poof, gone. When you see it, when you give voice to it, when you direct yourself something, the reality prior to is lost. You drop back into knowing, into separating, into not fully participating in the unknown unfolding. And then you miss the broad intelligence of the mountains and rivers, the broad intelligence of the stones and rocks, and of the animals, fish, birds, and insects. For a little while, or even for a moment or two, let the world say you. Let it give you shape. Let it present you in ways not yet seen or detected. When we call it Mount Spokane or Mount Rainier, we not only miss what those before us saw and called it, we miss all that it is. Sang-san said in the verse of the faith mind, "The more words and thoughts, the less they fit reality." So there is no need for chat, chat, chat. But some may wonder, so what am I to do? No matter how I hold myself, the mind goes on and on, thoughts continue and continue. Eiken Roshi said the stomach secretes pepsin and the brain's thoughts, for some more, for others less. And all you can do, and all you need to do, is keep dropping into. Drop into your belly, into your gut, into the center. It doesn't matter to the mountain whether it is blowing or still. It just rests in itself. It rests in reality. The mountain isn't concerned with conditions, and you need not bother yourself either. Just return 100 times, 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times. And no matter what thoughts or how many, stay. Stay in. Not rejecting the wind, but not indulging it either. Simply trust the process and stay. Stay. Sometime back, a woman in her seventh or eighth session, who'd been practicing for a few years, was having, by her telling, a terrible session. Her mind was loud, active, and insistent through every single period, whether sitting, walking, eating, or listening to Taisho. Every moment was filled with relevant and irrelevant thoughts. On the last day of the 7-day session, she was sitting next in line for Sosan, the closing Dokusan. The person before her in the Dokusan room was taking an inordinate amount of time. So this woman's thoughts, as she sat waiting to see Eiken Roshi for the last time, her thoughts were roiling. She was getting frustrated, then angry. For 7 days, not one moment of respite. No silence, no stillness, no relaxation. And as she sat there waiting, her thoughts built into an unceasing cascade. But she kept returning to Mu, albeit again by her estimation, unsuccessfully. Finally, the Dokusan bell rang, and before she could get up from the chair, everything stopped, and the colors and sounds advanced, and she was filled with She was annihilated by the sound of a single car's radio on a nearby street. She went in to meet Roshi, but couldn't say a word, so filled was she by music. She said later that Roshi smiled knowingly, nodded, and said, "We'll meet again," and rang the bell. Now, these decades later, she's a Diamond Sangha teacher down under in Australia. And of course, this story has a nice ending. But that isn't actually relevant. Her determination and trust in Zazen influenced the Zendo. And the entire room was more engaged because of her practice. We practice for ourselves, but also for each other. And we also practice for the mountains and the dead squirrel on the side of the road. We practice for ourselves and simultaneously for the soon to be extinct. We practice for ourselves and simultaneously for the warming ocean's inhabitants and for the shifting winds. And when one wakes, if only for a moment, all of us, sometimes in unknown hidden recesses, we too, each of us, wake. So please trust yourself, trust the process, and trust the world's unknown unfolding. Be sure to call this woman's experience mind or Buddha. Will certainly dampen and misdirect your own practice as you then end up chasing after visionary flowers in the air. Dio wrote, to call it mind or Buddha violates its nature. It isn't saying, at least not yet, that there isn't mind or Buddha. But when we call it that, we make it into something which it isn't. It isn't something, but also it isn't nothing. Our labeling, our branding doesn't hinder or dull that which is prior to, but it does dull and limit you. It limits and narrows your own possibilities. So do not make your own mind into a flower in the air, pushed and pulled, tumbled and trundled by the slightest breezes or shift in temperature. Simply stay right here with this breath, with this group of people, in this time that is no time at all. For you, at your very bottom, are prior to, and there is no way to change that fact or that reality.